This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Justin Cohen, and coming up on this special edition of the programme, a big moment for the Labour Party.
Our political editor Lee Harpin had a front row seat throughout the conference in Brighton and joins us to discuss the highs and the lows of what many are describing as a watershed moment in the party's history. It's also potentially a watershed moment in relations between the party and the Jewish community that hit such lows during the Corbyn era. Lee, thank you for joining us, and actually thank you for being awake. I'm surprised after all your partying and writing thousands of words, I think, during the course of this week, that you are still awake. So thank you for that. I wanted to start by asking you, you've been to many party conferences in your career, both on Fleet Street and since then in the Jewish media. How did this compare with the last few years?
First of all, thank you for that intro. Yes, I was pleased for a good night's sleep last night, the first in four nights. But I must admit, Sunday morning, I drove down to Brighton with some trepidation, having been in Liverpool, and I think previously Brighton as well, for conferences under the Jeremy Corbyn era. They were not pleasant experiences, especially for a journalist bearing a placard or a name badge stating they were from a Jewish publication. Just to give you some indication of what it was like back then, Jeremy Corbyn and his leadership welcomed in activists who, quite frankly, at the top of their list of want-to-dos within the party were to force organisations such as the Jewish Labour Movement and the Labour Friends of Israel out of the party. So I got down to Brighton feeling quite nervous, actually. Within the space of, say, 30 minutes, I found a completely different atmosphere at this year's conference.
In what way? What were the key differences, would you say?
The key differences, I'd say, well, the party came on and spoke to us and made it clear that shadow ministers would be there to speak to us. We'd obviously seen over the past 18 months of Keir Starmer's leadership attempts by those around him and the General Secretary and the Disciplinary Governance and Legal Unit to expel, suspend members and activists they believe or could prove were engaging in anti-Semitic activities. This meant a lot of the people that would have been at the conference under the previous leadership were not there. It was obvious to see from the very start. I also was offered interviews with shadow ministers. This would not have happened under the previous leadership. People were welcoming. They saw my name badge. They saw Lee Harpin from the Jewish News. They were coming up to me, welcoming me, saying how much they valued the coverage we ran in the paper and online. There was a massive, massive difference in atmosphere, and it was there to be seen from the moment we walked in.
Obviously, we know from your coverage this week that it wasn't wholly positive in some ways, and we'll come back to some of that a bit later on. There were some characters still on the floor of the House who weren't exactly friends of the community and didn't have the community's best interests at heart, let's say. But you mentioned that you had various interviews with shadow ministers, and one of those that you spoke to was the shadow party chair and the shadow minister for women, Annalise Dodds, who's been very involved in the process of forming the new party rules on tackling anti-Semitism. And you had a chance to sit down with her, so let's take a listen to that.
Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon, Annalise Dodds. Obviously, I've just sat through quite an emotional debate in conference around the anti-Semitism rules changes. I think what was heartening to hear was so many people coming forward, not just Jewish members, Muslim members, members from across the party coming out in support of the rule changes. But one question that did crop up repeatedly is, why are we even having to debate this topic in the Labour Party?
Well, exactly, and of course Labour's always been the party of equality, and it's really important we make sure that our own house is in order, that we do stamp out anti-Semitism wherever it rears its ugly head. Also, we make sure that we combat Islamophobia, anti-black racism, any form of prejudice and discrimination. None of them have any place in the Labour Party. So I am pleased that we've had that really constructive debate.
Yes.
And that we do get those new procedures in place so that everyone can feel safe in our party.
As somebody who's worked over the last few months quite closely, you've worked with Jewish stakeholders and other stakeholders around these rule changes. Can you explain to our listeners exactly how, I know it's quite a long process, but simply how these change Labour's disciplinary processes from what they were to what they are now, or will be?
Absolutely. And the first thing I would want to say, actually, is to thank those people from the Jewish communities who have been working with us, as well as a number of other experts as well from the legal profession, the council for the party on this issue, and also those who've been subject to other forms of discrimination also. But that work with representatives from the Jewish communities has been going on for quite a long time, many months, to make sure that we do have a robust process, and it is going to be quite different to what exists currently. So clearly the EHRC required Labour to never again have a politicised process, so we've completely removed that politicisation that might have been a concern previously and might have been in evidence previously. Now we'll have a situation where every single initial determination by a panel of the NEC will be subject to independent review by an independent lawyer. They will assess it against the principles that are in the package that we're putting forward today, Equalities Law and the Labour Party rulebook. And in every case, that independent lawyer will be deciding whether to veto their decision or to verify it. However, if the complainant feels that they want to appeal that decision, they will be able to do that. And there's a new panel for doing that, completely new panel, and it's composed of an independent lawyer, an independent HR or regulatory expert, and a lay Labour Party member. And they will then make a determination on that complaint, again, using those principles, Equalities Law and the Labour Party rulebook. There will be much more transparency around the process as well. And it really is an enormous leap forward. I think it will be the most robust, transparent complaints process of any political party that we know of in Europe. So hopefully it really will make a very big difference.
How quickly can we see these? Expect to see these changes in operation then?
Yes, so they need to be in action from the beginning of January of next year. What conference has been debating today is the kind of core building blocks of that new approach. What we need to get into the Labour Party rulebook. But there are other aspects that we will be working very intensely on in the months to come up until January. So, for example, we want to make sure that we can't have indefinite complaints where someone who's complained about can keep fobbing off any inquiries. So we need to have an approach to time limits that will prevent that kind of disruption of the process, but one that also recognises that those who are making complaints, and sometimes those complained about as well, could, for example, have health problems that might be disrupting their ability to respond so quickly. So we need to get all of that sorted out. The review arrangements as well, we're working on intensely currently to make sure that we'll have a proper, robust review of the new system also.
Finally, there is still a small minority within the party, as we've seen over the last couple of days, who oppose these rule changes for reasons I don't quite understand, to be honest. Well, I do understand in some cases. What would your message be to them?
Yes, I think there has been some discussion around some technical aspects of the process, particularly, for example, around the process for creating the initial recruitment panel, which will then be going on to find the people who will kind of populate this new system. And, I have engaged with people with those concerns. I do feel that they're misplaced, because I think actually the system will work far better than they would suggest it would do. But, they're kind of within their rights to mention any concerns. But I really do think that actually this system will be a robust one. It will be a fair one. It will be one that will make sure everyone's safe in our party.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Annalisa.
It's a real pleasure, and thank you for being at conference as well.
So that was Annalisa Dodds speaking to us about the impact and the implications of the very important rule changes that were approved at Labour's conference on the Sunday. What I think it's important to point out is, although they were approved, 25% of delegates in the room still opposed them. This meant that they opposed changes to Labour's rulebook that were a legal requirement as determined by the EHRC. So I think in many ways this exposes Labour's continued problem. A quarter of delegates are willing to stand up and oppose legally mandated rules.
Lee, what can the party leader actually do about this? Because obviously he sent out the clearest possible signals pretty much from day one about where he was going with these rule changes, that he would not only adopt the mandated rules, but actually perhaps go beyond that. And yet we still have a quarter of delegates who have taken the time to go to the party conference who think that tackling anti-Semitism is not as important. What can be done about that?
I think in many ways things will be done about it. A lot of these delegates were supporting instructions that were given to them by the Momentum organisation, who obviously were very much linked to the previous leadership. Now, they are expressing technical reasons for opposing rules. Some of them are saying the General Secretary is given too much power in deciding who. But the good thing about the rule changes are that they actually get to the bottom of taking groups such as Momentum away from having any influence at all moving forwards. And also what I think the leadership will go on to do, the leader himself, as a result of the EHRC, can no longer get involved in disciplinary proceedings. But the General Secretary and the team around the governance and legal unit can get involved into what are now much fairer disciplinary procedures. So I think some of these members and some of the delegates and some of the CLP leaders who are still opposing the rules could well face that they come into serious problems over the next few months and years with some of their views and opinions. And I think that is a way of going forward and tackling fairly and independently, because they must remain fair and independent, tackling these people and the views that they still hold. So I do think there is scope to deal with them moving forwards.
Okay, and Annalise Dodds wasn't the only shadow Secretary of State that you spoke to during the conference. You also had a chance to sit down with Joe Stevens, the Shadow Culture and Digital Secretary, discussing a whole wide range of issues, including the important Online Harms Bill to tackle online hate and other forms of abuse that is going to be coming up into Parliament before too long and is very much overdue. So let's hear from her.
So I'm delighted to be joined by Joe Stevens now to speak to us, and we're standing outside Middle Street Synagogue in Brighton, having just toured a new community centre and synagogue that's being erected in for the Brighton community, not just for the Jewish community but the wider community. How much of this is part of that thawing of tensions between the Jewish community and the Labour Party that obviously...
It's really, really important to me that Jewish people feel comfortable and welcomed and equal in the Labour Party as everybody else. And I know that that has not been the case in the recent past. And so I felt it was very important today to come and meet leaders in the Jewish community. I also, because of my brief, you know, culture and heritage and tourism, I wanted to hear more and see this fantastic new facility that's being built for the Jewish community and the community of Brighton down in Hove, and had a tremendous visit to have a look at the construction work, which is partway through, and I'm really looking to come forward to coming back when it's finished.
Yeah. So we're 2 days into conference at the moment as we speak. There had obviously been a very toxic culture around under the previous leadership, or certainly in the view of the Jewish community. Do you feel that there's a different atmosphere in conference this year?
I feel there's a different atmosphere, but what's most important to me, I think, is hearing Jewish members and delegates who are here, whether they feel that there's a better atmosphere. And, you know, yesterday I sat in the gallery of the conference hall and there were two young Jewish men in front of me sitting there, and I just thought, you know, that was a sign for me that I think that there have been improvements that have been made since Keir Starmer became leader of the Labour Party. Keir was very clear, it was the very first thing that he said on being elected, that he wanted to make sure that anti-Semitism was removed from the party. You know, it has been a cancer in the party, and I think that what Keir has done and the changes that we have made are making a big difference. But I, you know, as Keir says, we will only know whether that's been totally successful when Jewish members, former members, feel they want to come back to the party, but I think we're on a good way down the road.
Okay, that's good to hear. On a separate topic, and I know it's something that you've been heavily involved with, the government's online harms legislation. This is the legislation specifically for the Jewish community in terms of it's aiming to stop the proliferation and punish the social media companies who allow the proliferation of anti-Semitic hate. Now, the government are promising a lot with this legislation, which is still some way off from becoming an actual bill. But can I have your thoughts on the legislation as you see it? I know it's going under scrutiny at the moment in Parliament.
So, you know, the government has promised world-leading legislation, and we're determined in the Labour Party to make sure that they live up to that promise. At the moment, the bill we've got, it's weak, it's watered down, it doesn't do what it's promised to do. So, for example, the duty of care in the draft bill is simply around transparency. It lets social media companies self-regulate. So all they have to do is show that they comply with their terms and conditions. We don't think that's right. You know, we think that the model of self-regulation has already been shown again and again and again to have failed. So we should not have a system of self-regulation. Secondly, I'm concerned about the way in which the bill's drafted and the social media platforms that it covers under the what is, you know, a weak duty of care anyway. Because it only covers them if they're very large sites, for example, like Facebook. But we know that there are lots of alt-right sites where there is, you know, tons of anti-Semitism going on and being amplified, like Parler, Telegraph and others, where those will not fall within that top category of platforms where the duty would apply. So there's lots to do to improve it around hate speech, around discrimination, against protection of children. So, you know, we're going to be working very hard to make sure that bill is improved.
Okay, and finally, in the government's latest reshuffle, there was a surprising change. Oliver Dowden was replaced by Nadine Dorries. To many people, this was quite a surprising appointment by the Prime Minister. Can I have your thoughts on coming face-to-face with Nadine?
Well, so far, we've only had one outing together in the Chamber, and to be fair to Nadine, you know, she'd only just been appointed, so when we had oral questions the next morning, she couldn't really answer my questions. So, you know, I believe in not just words, but in actions. So, you know, I will judge whoever is the Secretary of State for DCMS by their actions. And one of the things I'll judge them on is on this online safety bill to make sure whether they do deliver world-leading legislation that protects the Jewish community and everybody else.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Jo.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Lee, you had the opportunity to speak to Jo Stevens on a visit to the developing, in fact, Brighton Jewish community and their new facilities during the course of the conference, an event that was organised, I believe, by the Jewish Leadership Council. But from the positive to the rather negative was this motion that came before conference on Palestine. Now, there were some really positive things on Israel. For example, we saw that the LFI fringe reception not only featured video message from the leader, not only the Shadow Foreign Secretary, but also the number of delegates that poured into that room. In fact, at one point, there were so many, they had to turn people away. So again, that's the kind of positive signs about a movement in the party generally at a grassroots level. However, and it's a big however, we also saw this Palestine motion, a completely imbalanced motion that failed to mention terrorism against Israeli civilians, that honed in on what it described as the ongoing Nakba being perpetrated against the Palestinians by Israel, of course, used the old apartheid trope as well. And that motion actually passed conference. How can we square, once again, how can we square what the leadership are saying with what the grassroots still believe?
I think we have to accept that there's still a long way to go in terms of changing the culture within the party. Despite the changes and the progress around open anti-Semitism and the EHRC rules, there are many people who don't see the link. They still don't accept that extreme anti-Zionism clearly strays into anti-Semitism. A lot of these delegates, when you speak to them as well, they just don't understand the issue. Of course, they have a right, as we all do. We all get concerned with human rights across a lot of countries. They see footage from the region and they feel that they have a duty, particularly around Palestine. Now, clearly, some of these are being drawn to the issue for completely the wrong and some would say anti-Semitic reasons, singling out to the Jewish state, one would question why that is happening. What I thought was really interesting, though, was the motion was passed on conference. I think it was a show of hands of around 2-1. Some of the speeches were dreadful. A young Labour delegate, I think, described Israel as a settler colonialist country. But some of the speeches were nowhere near as savage as the speeches we'd heard under Jeremy Corbyn's leadership. So I think that's a small plus, and it is a very small plus. But what I think is a big plus is that within 20 minutes of this motion being passed, I'd called Lisa Nandy, the Shadow Foreign Secretary's press office, and said, this is unacceptable. How can the, as you've said, Justin, how can the party be claimed to be making steps around anti-Semitism when this sort of motion is being passed on the floor? And within 20 minutes, Lisa has condemned the motion on behalf of the leadership. We cannot support this motion. She stressed quite clearly that the party is committed to a safe and secure Israel alongside a future Palestinian state. So I think that is a big plus. And what we also have to recognise is this motion was passed. It gives some direction of the mood amongst the grassroots, yes. But does the leadership need to accept it and use it as party policy? No, they don't. There's a national policy forum which has higher precedence than Labour's conference, of which the policies that are likely to make the manifesto will be agreed. Now, as Luke Akers has said, this policy will not be in Labour's manifesto if we were to see an election, say, in 2023, as many people are now predicting. So I think we can take some confidence from that. But we can also see how much work is still to be done in rooting out anti-Semitism, particularly anti-Semitism around anti-Zionism within the Labour Party.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't see the same flag-waving PSC look-alike conference on the floor of the main hall we did a few years back under Jeremy Corbyn, but that motion certainly does show how far there is still to go. And you mentioned Luke Akehurst, a member of the NEC of the party, and you also spoke to him shortly after that motion was passed.
I'm standing with Luke Akehurst right now, a member of Labour's National Executive Committee. Yesterday, Luke, we saw on the conference floor a motion on Israel-Palestine. What were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I don't think it should have been prioritised. There's a thing called a priority ballot which picks 20 topics for the conference to debate. It's ridiculous that this year we've tried to debate 20 things. They haven't had a proper debate. So, for instance, that debate, there are only 3 or 4 speeches. And it was mixed in with stuff about Afghanistan and every other foreign policy issue as well. One of the implications of the rule changes that Keir Starmer pushed through at the weekend is we're going to drop back down to the unions picking 6 topics and the constituency parties picking 6 topics, which would actually mean next year the ranking that the Israel-Palestine debate would mean it wouldn't have got debated. Right. So I don't see the justification for another incessant debate about Israel and the Palestinians when the conference rather famously had already debated that in 2018 and 2019. It's just kind of performative. Yeah. I also think some of the people who are angry about the way in which the party is clamping down on anti-Semitism are using this almost as a tit for tat to try and kind of say to Jewish members, well, you're stopping us from this form of discourse, but we're going to push it right up to the line and wind you up with extremely delegitimizing discourse about Israel. Secondly, the actual text is agreed at a thing called a compositing meeting, because there were several motions about Israel and the Palestinians that merged together. That meeting was an opportunity to drop the most contentious language, so the stuff about apartheid and about ongoing Nakba. But for some reason, what emerged was a motion that actually took the worst language, the stuff that was out of the Young Labour motion, and put that in front of the conference floor. The speech that moved it, I thought, was deliberately pushing language as far as it could. So settler colonial references, which could be a breach of the IRA definition, that you could argue that that is denying Jewish right to self-determination. I mean, no recognition that Jewish people are indigenous to the Middle East whatsoever. And when you describe something as settler colonial, you're implying it's not legitimately there. and the comparison to Franco. So there was this weird sort of riff saying, you know, we sided with the Republicans in the Spanish Civil War, we sided with the ANC. And I'm sat there thinking, well, it's part of the common heritage of everyone on the left that we all backed the ANC and Mandela.
Yeah.
And you're saying Jews who support Israel or and their allies aren't part of that tradition, don't sit within it. And then to say that everyone in the Labour movement has supported the democratic side in the Spanish Civil War against Franco, and if you support Israel, that makes you a fascist.
Yes.
That's not the Zionism that I'm familiar with, where I'm pretty sure that the struggle in the 1930s against fascism, whether it was in Spain or Nazi Germany or Italy or whatever, was a struggle where the left and the Jews were on the same side and the Zionists were on the same side. So I really found that offensive. There was a very courageous speech by Steve McCabe, MP, the chair of LFI, and managed to get onto the conference floor.
And I was there, it did actually receive quite a, I heard lots of applause.
Yeah. We weren't going to win it, because basically it's quite difficult on these show of hand votes to persuade people to vote against any motion. Like, the culture of the conference is kind of, people bring along motions, it kind of sounds like motherhood and apple pie. You're trying to debate the entire history of the Middle East in 4 minutes, and people are like, oh, I'm shocked by Israel and poor old Palestinians, and stick their hand up without thinking about what's not in this motion and are there things in it offensive. That and most of the major unions would have gone, oh, it's in line with policy that the TUC has already passed. More interesting, there were two other votes in that debate. There were two reference backs, and a reference back is when you try to include extra text, or you ask the National Policy Forum to look at its text again. There was one that told everyone that was shocked that the National Policy Forum hadn't read a book by Ilan Pappe, and that apparently Ilan Pappe's views were central to the Labour Party's thinking.
Right.
That was defeated just on show of hands. And then there was one that tried to discredit the notion of a two-state solution, and I think that was the one that went to a card vote and was very heavily defeated. What's interesting is in between us, actually it's talking about the three bits of the conference floor. So you've got the hardcore of moderates who are not going to vote for anything that's got BDS in it or that makes the apartheid allegation or whatever. They might, people in my wing of the party might still be critical of Israel, but they're not into delegitimisation.
I think few people could expect a progressive party to just be, you know...
And then you've got the hardcore around Momentum, who are anti-Israel, but they're also anti the processes that have been mandated by the EHRC. And I find that absolutely shocking, that after all the work that John Landsman did inside Momentum to help them develop an understanding that there was a problem of left anti-Semitism and the left had to be part of dealing with it, he's sidelined, and the people running Momentum at the moment instructed their supporters to vote against changes to the disciplinary process are actually mandated by law. So
they've suffered quite a few defeats, though, haven't they?
Yeah, they're off out there, increasingly marginalised, walking away from relevance and walking away from strength at the conference. In the middle, you've got this, they're not a bloc because no one's given them any instructions. You've got a swing set of delegates who did vote the right way on the EHRC recommendations, do genuinely want to tackle anti-Semitism, but are kind of blind to the offence caused by the delegitimising stuff in those motions about Israel, and it's just, oh, it's a motion that condemns Israel, we'll still vote for it without thinking about carefully about the content.
So how confident are you, though? Say there was a general election, as many people predict, 2023, that Labour will be in the sort of position, the sort of state that you could confidently turn to the Jewish community and say, you know, if you've got concerns about the party's policy on Israel-Palestine, I think you're going to be okay come 2023 to vote for us.
I can be absolutely confident that there won't be stuff in the manifesto that would be a deal breaker for Jewish people that were otherwise minded to vote Labour.
There is a big chunk out there,
but,
as we know.
But also, I don't want to get into the game of being the guy from outside the community. Particularly in my day job at We Believe in Israel, I work on a cross-party campaign. I never want to be the Labour guy who like says, oh yeah, it's all fine. Jewish voters have got to be given the space to come to their own decision about whether they're ready to give Labour any consideration or not. It's not for them to be like berated into or cajoled into coming back. The Labour Party's got to set its stall out, and then those voters have got to make a judgment based on what they think is good for them as individuals and for their community and the country. I hope that we're taking steps back towards being a party that Jewish voters who identify with the left would feel comfortable with again. But I don't underestimate the length of that journey. When you're talking about a situation where lots of British Jews were existentially worried for their family's future and the future of the community if Jeremy Corbyn had become Prime Minister, there's a community with a shrewd enough understanding of history and of how anti-Semitism had worked that it's not suddenly going to turn around 5 minutes later and say everything's fine, because not all fine yet. It's a lot better. If someone had told me in 2019 that this would be the Labour Party that we'd have in 2021, I would have said, yeah, give me it, I'll take that. That sounds like a good point to have reached.
Thank you so much, Luke, for joining us.
Thank you to Luke for taking the time to speak to us at the Jewish News podcast. Lee, the other person, one of the other people you spoke to during conference was the chair of the Jewish Labour Movement, Mike Katz. JLM has played a huge role over the last few years in fighting anti-Semitism from within the party. Its voice obviously amplified just because it's part of the party, its only affiliate. And it also played a big role when it came to putting forward the rule changes and making sure that those went through. The other role that JLM are now once again playing within the party, which again shows the movement in travel, is to deliver anti-Semitism training. Now, during the Corbyn era, of course, famously, there was a time when the party looked away from JLM when it came to delivering training on this issue. But they're now firmly back with that responsibility, delivering training across the party at all sorts of levels, ministerial level, council level, member level. And that continued during the conference itself. And you spoke to Mike Katz about his work.
I'm delighted to be joined now by Mike Katz, the national chair of the Jewish Labour Movement. Now, it's Monday and Mike has just hosted an anti-Semitism awareness session inside the Labour conference venue here at Brighton. This was advertised in the brochure, the programme for conference. So, Mike, how did it go?
It was really, really positive. And the thing is that we've been doing this training session online via Zoom. Throughout the year, we've trained at the Shadow Cabinet, the PLP, the National Executive Committee. We've done some of the biggest training events that Labour's ever held for members, thousands of members and role holders, branch chairs, CLP chairs and secretaries and the like, over Zoom, and delivering this anti-Semitism awareness programme that we have developed in conjunction with the party.
Can you give us some indication of any, you know, what this programme actually entails, some of the details?
Well, it's a starter for 10, really, for anti-Semitism awareness training. And so we actually go into kind of making people aware of, you know, the Jewish community in the UK, its size, where it's populated and situated, the variety of the community in kind of demographic terms. We talk about attitudes of Jews in the UK. We talk about history of anti-Semitism. We go through some of the main tropes around blood and power and money, and we obviously use examples of anti-Semitism both of the right and of the left, and talk about the way that you talk about Israel and Palestine in a non-anti-Semitic way, and the way that anti-Semitism can interact with other forms of racism and indeed other forms of hate. And it's an introductory hour and a half session that we conduct, and I have to say, you know, we had a really, really good session. For the first time we've done this version of the training in person, obviously for the first time we've done it in person, and it was really nice to be in a room interacting with people, and people were really receptive. They want to come and understand. And, you know, we've always said, we're not, you know, it isn't that large majority of Labour Party members are, you know, actively anti-Semitic, but they're just not aware of what it is, and so it's easy for them to kind of, you know, fall into the wrong trap and say the wrong thing, or kind of be misled or influenced by people who are acting in bad faith to say and do the wrong things, or indeed think that the whole thing is, you know, it's a scam or made up or about destabilising Jeremy Corbyn or whatever. But, you know,
Senior in the party suggested to me that members of the Socialist Campaign Group had themselves been
to your training sessions, and they suggested it was quite cathartic seeing these members actually confront their own prior prejudices and sort of admitting that the training had been very helpful and progressive and it had healed wounds. Is that correct, or are they feeding me porky pies, basically?
I mean, it's more the fact that we train an awful lot of MPs and we can judge what happens in people's hearts. But, you know, the point is the party is deadly serious about making sure that people get the training. The leader's had it. We've given it to the leader. We've given the deputy leader. No, they need
to. Did he pass?
It's not a pass or fail,
Lee. I'm sure.
But you know, the point. Yeah, Willie absolutely did. But you know, the point, simply put, is that you know, MPs are leaders. You know, they have huge agency, and you know, it's important. And we still encourage them to kind of come out and say this is wrong. Anti-Semitism was a problem, still is a problem. We can't rest until it's left the party completely. It's left our society completely. And this training is part of that. We need every MP to kind of stand up and speak up about it and not kind of be escaping in the fantasy that it's some sort of kind of factional game playing, which is about undermining the left.
Final question. It doesn't approach, but the speculation is we could see that the general election, say 2023.
Yeah.
Do you think you will feel supremely confident enough to go out there and speak to the Jewish community in mass, not just your own supporter base, and say, yeah, I believe you can vote for this party. They are no longer the party that they were in terms of attitudes and beliefs about Jews that we saw under Jeremy Corbyn?
I really hope we can get to that point in 2023, because that's when I think the next election will be. But look, to be absolutely clear, we were out this year in May campaigning in Barnet and Camden for our new Assembly member Anne Clark and, of course, for Sadiq Khan, our mayor. I was very proud to campaign for them both because they've both absolutely been rock solid on confronting anti-Semitism from the get-go. You know, we'll have local elections next year, and for lots of your listeners, whether they are in Camden or in Barnet or in other boroughs, even shock horror outside London, in Manchester and in Leeds, you know, again, it's kind of you campaigning for Labour groups and Labour councillors who are solid and absolutely about making lives better. The tragedy of going around the Barnet elections in 2018 was, it was very, very clear to me that what everybody, Jew or non-Jew alike, needed was a better, much better council than they had in the Tory administration. And the absolute tragedy is that they didn't get it, largely because lots of people, not just Jews, felt they couldn't vote for the Labour Party, led by Jeremy Corbyn.
One final question. Yeah. What would your message be to Luciana Berger? Would you appeal to her to come back into the party that's her natural home, as some are?
Well, look, in JLM, we always had a very kind of clear, implicit, but a clear understanding that everybody had their own personal red lines about when they would leave the party. They could always stay a JLM member. When they would leave the party, when they would stay, and I think kind of the reverse is true, that everybody needs to come back at their own pace and their own time.
We've seen Adam Langdon.
My very good friend, and he's an immense asset. He's an immense asset to the community.
I think I broke that one online after Adam told me not to write it, but I didn't see that.
Mazel tov, Lee, you news hound. I mean, you know, Adam's such a mensch, and he's done so much for the community, both working for the JLC, but also in terms of what he's done for the struggle against anti-Semitism in the party and through JLM. And we want to see Louise Ellman, obviously, return. And she has to be happy that the party is, you know, is in the right fit and proper state, particularly in her neck of the woods up in Liverpool, where she was subject to the most horrendous abuse from local members, and there's been some of the worst examples of anti-Semitism in the country. And so, you know, everybody has to do it at their own pace and their own time. And, you know, nobody's going to second guess or judge people. But, you know, I want to see everybody who left the party because of anti-Semitism feel they're able, once it's clear that we're on the right road, to come back.
Thank you so much, Mike, for giving me your time today. That was
Lee,
really,
you know, you've fulfilled one of my life's ambitions. I can tick it off the bucket list.
Thank you very much, Mike Katz. Lee, just if we can wrap up now after your 4 days of gallivanting around Brighton. When people look back on this conference in a year's time, how significant will it be in terms of the changing path between the Jewish community and the Labour Party?
I think this will turn out to be one of the most momentous and historic Labour conferences for some time. You only have to look at some of the things that actually happened. The EHRC rule change had massive implications for the party moving forward. the significance of Louise Ellman rejoining. What does that say? This is a woman who walked out 2 years ago, devastated, but she feels that while she readily accepts that there's work to be done, a lot of work to be done, she feels comfortable enough to rejoin. But I also think we walk away looking at the motions that were passed. The Israel motion shows how much work there is still to be done. We can't accept the Labour Party to come out to be a party where 100% of people are waving Israeli flags and being entirely pro-Israel. But the hardline stink of pro-Palestinian Israel hatred is still there, and that needs to be worked on. There's still members within the party who clearly need to be ousted in terms of anti-Semitism. There's a waiting list of, as Luke Aitken said, 5,000, not a waiting list, a backlog of 5,000 complaints that the party still has to deal with involving allegations of anti-Semitism. But I think, again, we can take great heart that around Keir Starmer, with a general secretary in David Evans, and a team of standards and a governance legal unit that is really looking to clamp down and does, in my opinion, having spoken to them, understand what is and what constitutes anti-Semitism, we can look forward to the fact that many of these members are, over the next year or so, going to be ousted. Now, whether or not, if there's an election in 2023, those in the community who had major doubts and who left the party feel that they can come back remains to be seen. But I am hopeful we can get to 2023 and we have a Labour Party not ridden with the stink of institutional anti-Semitism, but a party who we can judge on policies only. Because wouldn't it be great to have a general election again where we have a Conservative Party, a Labour Party, a Liberal Democrat Party, where we go to the polls and we vote for them on policies only and not whether they are anti-Semitic or not.
Hear, hear. I think we can all agree on that one. And Lee, just finally, do you think the party have an understanding that whilst they have made a start here, there is still a long way to go? I mean, we didn't yesterday in Keir Starmer's keynote speech, we didn't hear him, apart from the very significant introduction that he gave to Louise Ellman back into the party, we didn't hear him talk further about his plans with regards to tackling Jew hatred within the party, to tackling the bias that still exists within parts of the grassroots. Do you think there is this understanding that they're just a bit of the way into this battle?
Yeah, there was an unfortunate quote put out, I suspect on behalf of Keir Starmer, on the day of the rule changes, which appeared to suggest that somehow he thought the job was done. But I think he made that very clear in his address to, which was a video address, but it was recorded after that statement. But there's no way he believes the fight against anti-Semitism is over. I think the party understand that. I think they completely understand that. In the conversations I had with people, they want us to still come forward, giving them examples of anti-Semitism that they will pledge to deal with. So there's a real understanding, I think, that this is not job done. And I think there's also an understanding that if the job is not done properly, Labour will not represent a party that many people, non-Jewish, Jewish, across the country are prepared to put into government. Because I do think at the very heart of this, when Keir Starmer said he wanted to make fighting anti-Semitism his top priority, he knew that a party that in any way was seen to side with anti-Semites was not a party that could ever go into government in this country.
Lee, thank you very much. And thank you for all your hard work during the course of this week.
Thank you very much. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. It was good to see what was going on.
And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit www.gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to thank our guests, Lee Harpin, Annalise Dodds, Joe Stevens, Luke Aitkenhurst, and Mike Katz. Our technical producer, Xander Mindell, Adam Bradley for his work on post-production, and you for listening. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured today, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you at editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Justin Cohen, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.